The following programming is sponsored by BLS Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
This week has been a little crazy. Sit back and get your recap of what happened and what is happening in sports, entertainment, movies, TV, politics, technology, and current events. You can count on getting a dose of comedy, great guests, fun, the best talk around, and even more outrageous fun. That's why we love those two guys. Fun, fascinating, and real. We are live with the Brian and Lee Show. So unbelievable, we could not make this stuff up, even if we tried.
And it's great to be back here on another sunny Friday morning here in the Delaware Valley. I'm Brian.
I'm Lee.
And this is the Brian and Lee Show coming at you on WWDB 860 AM.
It's good to be here after... After the election.
Exactly. I'm still getting a hangover from that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we voted. Yeah, we went out and voted.
Of course we did.
Yeah. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a long line when we went.
No, because we didn't go when the doors opened like a lot of people did.
Yeah, it was good, though. We went. It was like a circus there. They had
pretty much. They had not clowns, but somebody with a giant head on.
Yeah, and they had... They had music they were playing.
Yep, they had a DJ. Another radio station there, live.
I'm not going to mention that.
Okay. Live.
Okay. Live.
I said another. I didn't say which one.
Yeah. And they were giving away free food.
They were, yeah.
Yeah. They had a food truck out there.
Which took our parking space.
And after you voted, you could stand in line and wait for free food. We didn't do that.
No, of course not.
Because we had things to do. But
no.
It was good.
Number one. Number two, you don't know what they're really making in there.
Right. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't have any idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to be here with everyone.
Absolutely. Colin's here this week. How you doing?
Doing great.
All right.
All right.
And that Eagles game had to be, was a lot closer than it had to be.
Yeah, they gave me the worries, you know, a case of the worries, because you didn't know which way it was going
to
go.
Exactly. We sat down to eat dinner. It was 22-0.
And then?
And then they let him back in.
I don't know.
They left the door open.
They did, and that's the problem that I have with this year's Eagles team, last year's Eagles team. This year's Eagles team, they don't have the killer instinct. You know, when
no, I wouldn't say that. I think that they have the killer instinct. The problem is that they leave points on the board or off the board.
You're going to contradict me?
Yeah. I've seen the killer instinct.
You think they have it?
I think so. I mean, why else would you go for 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-2?
Well, they have that, but, you know, in terms of...
You know, if it was Doug Peterson or... Chip Kelly or whatever, you know, they would just punt.
Yeah. Well, or go for the 3 points.
Well, that's what I wanted them to do on a couple of those plays.
I know. You know, get the points.
Mm-hmm.
Put the other team away.
Exactly.
Step on their throat.
Step on their head when they're down.
What did Chuck Bednarik tell you?
Well, I can't tell you exactly what he said.
No, I know. But.
he literally sat on the guy until the clock read zero.
Yeah. And that's what you do. You don't let the guy up. No.
No.
You push his face in the dirt. That's what you do. And that's the killer instinct.
That is what it is.
Doesn't have it.
No.
You know, they don't have it this year. And this week... In 2 days, they play Dallas.
That's right, in Dallas.
In Dallas. Dallas hasn't been doing too well.
No, they haven't, and hopefully we can keep that streak alive.
And I heard that their quarterback is out.
Dak Prescott?
Yeah, that he's injured. So I don't know.
Don't know.
Did you hear anything about that, Colin?
I think questionable as of now via a hamstring injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So... Yeah.
Why don't you talk to Fox and get Troy Aikman back?
Yeah.
He can still play.
But he could, I mean, with a hamstring, he could still play, maybe.
No. That's too painful.
Oh, so you think he's going to be out?
Yeah. Do you know where the hamstring is?
Yeah.
It's in your knee.
Well, it's connected. It's the back.
Exactly.
The back of your leg, yeah.
Back of the leg, yeah, but it's close to the knee.
Listen, it's no more painful than broken ribs.
Exactly. On an amusement park ride.
And I played with broken ribs. You know, I had to walk around the amusement park with broken ribs. Why? Tell everybody why.
Why? Because you can't stand centripetal force.
No.
Because that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, we go on this ride that goes around and around and around, and me, as the latest at the time, was being thrown around.
I don't think you were thrown around by the G-forces. I think you were actually
trying to do that. No, that would probably be my sister. She was purposely trying to do that.
Yeah. You were trying to injure me.
It knew.
And, you know, that's parent abuse, you know. What can I say?
What can I say? I don't know.
It's parent abuse.
Mm. Well, you consented to get on the ride, so you don't really have any cause of action.
No, I know. Yeah. What am I going to do, sue my kids, you know? But
somebody might have, especially nowadays.
Yeah. I don't think you would do that again to me, though.
No, I would not.
No.
Mainly because you don't go on a lot of rides anymore.
I think you've learned your lesson there.
Uh-huh, exactly.
I think so. Well, it was daylight saving time again.
Exactly, and you didn't realize that your new car has an easy way to turn it on and off.
Right, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, new cars nowadays, especially with computers, make it very easy to turn daylight savings time on and off.
I needed your help.
That's right.
Yeah.
You needed my index finger.
But it's done. I don't know why we still need daylight savings time. You know, originally it was because farmers needed extra daylight. You know, kids had to work in the fields. I don't see too many kids going out plowing the fields today.
Well, you're not in the rural areas.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure.
I know, I sound like a dog, don't I?
Even if they do it out there, you know?
Yeah. Rural.
Yeah, yeah. So,
also interesting with our dinner on the Eagles game.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law wanted a cheesesteak instead of the pizza.
Yeah.
And you know how a cheesesteak is usually supposed to be like a small roll? This thing was like a torpedo. And they forgot to bring it with the order.
And I don't know how they missed that.
Now, I know that you're busy with all these orders for the Eagles game. But I mean, how do you miss something that is that big?
It was like 2 feet long.
It looked like it.
Yeah, that cheesesteak.
Yeah, they basically had a foot long hoagie roll.
Right.
That really looked like a foot long.
So, I got the Apple ear pods.
And you took your hearing test.
I took the hearing test. And I found out that I have mild hearing loss in my left ear and no hearing loss in my right ear.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Colin, when you talk to me, speak into my right ear because I won't be able to hear you in my left ear.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You sure it's not cotton balls?
It's not cotton balls. No.
That are stuck in your ear.
But that's what I'm going to do. And I tried the hearing, you know, it compensates. Now, these ear pods compensate for the hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
They build the profile, and it does help. It does help.
So you can really use it as a hearing aid now?
Yeah, as a hearing assistant. I think the term is. I think the thing cost me $250.
Exactly.
But, you know, when a hearing aid would have cost like thousands
four digits.
Yeah.
Easy.
So, this is pretty good. I think Apple is going to – I think they're going to clean up on this.
Yeah, they have the cheapest hearing aid on the market.
Yeah.
Just like when Sony had the cheapest DVD player on the market.
Well, and you don't know it's – you don't know that it's a hearing aid because it looks like the ear pod.
Exactly.
It operates, you know, you can listen to music with it. You can listen to audiobooks. So, yeah, that's the thing. That's the key.
Exactly. The other key is to not blast your music.
Well, I think I have this hearing loss. I was surprised that it's not greater than it is, you know, because I think I went to too many concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to music.
You bought too many toys that has surround sound in it through
could,
the years.
Yeah, it could be.
And all you heard was boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Well, that takes a toll on your hearing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So do these realistic movies.
Yeah, I like the realistic movies, too.
What is this now, 4D sound or something like that?
4D, yeah, yeah.
Whatever they call it nowadays.
The movie theater shakes.
Mm-hmm.
The seats actually move.
Exactly.
Shake. It's like a ride.
Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me of a ride that I never tried until after they changed it. It was called Alien Extra Terror Estrial.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. You basically are strapped in like a roller coaster, and the alien escapes. And then eventually you feel its hot breath on the back of your neck.
Oh, you're kidding.
I kid you not.
Oh, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, no.
No, I went to the new tamer version, which was just Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Where Stitch gets out and burps in your ear.
Oh, my God. Well, we're going to Disney in January.
That's right, in a few months.
Yeah. We're going to see what's new at Disney.
That's right. What's new, what's old, what's borrowed, what's blue.
Yeah. What can we do, mm-hmm. you know, for Disney?
As much as we want to.
Here's something. We have a guest coming up, it's Eric Drucker.
Drucker.
Drucker is going to be with us. And it's called Drucker, right? Drucker?
Drucker.
Or Drucker. No, Drucker. Drucker.
Say it however you want. It'll probably be wrong.
Probably will be. But it's okay. Yeah, he's a illustrator and artist, and he does graphic novels. And his latest novel is The Naked City.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to hear about that.
The only way I can picture that is that there's nobody left in the city. Everybody's gone to the rural area.
Yeah.
And the city's completely empty.
It's not about that at all.
Oh, really?
No, not at all. You'll be surprised.
Oh, I will be, absolutely.
So the one thing I wanted to talk about to you, because everybody's nervous. Government, you know, you can't depend on government to take care of you. This notion that they're going to send you money or they're going to do things that are going to help you, forget about that. It's not going to happen. You got to find a way to create your own wealth. You have to find a way to be successful, even with the roadblocks the government puts on you. So that's my challenge to everybody, is not to get upset, but, you know, I think it was Ronald Reagan said it, that the most drastic words you could hear is that I'm from the government, I'm here to help.
Mm.
You know, So,
yeah, you're talking about the guy who said he's going to trickle down the economics and never did.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's amazing to me how many people want to rely on the government for help, for assistance. And some people need that assistance.
Exactly.
But
you make it sound like it's all 330 million people who are doing that.
No. But you need to take care of yourself and your family and don't rely so much on Washington, D.C., because they're not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to get done there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with all the taxes that we pay, you know, over 50% in taxes.
Exactly. Notice the term we pay.
Yeah.
The big boys don't pay.
Well, the middle class pays it, you know.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, we're the middle class.
Yeah.
The big boys upstairs don't pay.
No, no.
The 1%.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the near future.
Absolutely.
But rely on yourself. That's what I say. Rely on yourself.
If you can.
No, you always can. Or rely on
your family.
Family or friends. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to look at it.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Why not?
And now I'm going to rely on our on Colin to take control as we take this break. We'll be right back with our guest.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
When it comes to the father and son team, you gotta listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
And it's great to be back here on this Friday morning.
That's right. We're finally getting a little bit of warmth.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's a real privilege and a pleasure to have on the guest line. Eric Drucker is with us. And
hi there.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hello.
Good. Good. Hi there. Which one is Brian and which one is Lee?
I'm Brian.
And I'm Lee.
Okay. Very straightforward. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm Eric.
Hello, Eric.
Hi there.
And you were born and raised in the Isle of Manhattan, right?
Yes, that's right. The big island, yes, Manhattan Island.
You know,
Lower Manhattan at that, which is kind of a pretty crazy neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I would go there occasionally, and I can't take too much of Manhattan because it's too much stimulus for me. You know,
I know just what you mean. Yes, if I hadn't been born and raised there, I don't know how much of it I could take. You know, I said it's a crazy place to grow up, but crazy in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's dozens and dozens of languages spoken right in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it was a total cacophony and very multicultural and just never, you know, there's never any loss for inspiration on what to make a picture about or write something about, because there's always stuff going on. You just look out the window and you'll be inspired.
And you know, I guess the question we want to try to answer is it possible for an artist to survive in the 21st century?
Yes, that's the question at hand.
That's the question, mm-hmm. Yes. So your new book, Naked City, which I love the title, and you know, what, can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Well, just starting with the title,
wow.
Naked City, it's kind of the many different meanings of the word naked. There's the literal meaning, naked, unclothed. Mm-hmm. The protagonist is a young woman who, in order to pay her rent, she gets a job working as an artist's model, posing nude for a painter.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, and all the things that ensue from there, but that's just the kind of the obvious literal meaning. There's also, it's also an examination of nakedness as in emotional nakedness or just being in a vulnerable state. And the city itself is stripped naked. It's an expose of all the different layers of the class society and just raw New York in its naked state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the title. I'm riffing on the old film noir from the 1940s, the crime drama. But this is more of a comedy where it's like actual nakedness, where all of the different characters, not just the young woman, the protagonist, but the painter himself, and all of the characters are we see them naked in different key points in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is kind of emotionally naked and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer that question, is it possible for an artist to survive as an artist in the 21st century? Difficult. It's never been easy, but I think it's more difficult than ever. And I have so many artist friends who, some of them are amazing, not just visual artists, but musicians,
mm-hmm.
and writers, but they're unable to pay their bills with their livelihood as an artist. Somehow I've been managing to just scrape by through the years. Maybe I got a head start just from being in New York City, and now I wind up doing covers for the New Yorker magazine. But as far as doing things like the real creative expression, well, like this graphic novel, which is really a labor of love, it's a 300-page story all about growing up in the city, and it's very much of an open question. Is it possible to pay one's bills with the amount that they're paying artists nowadays? I suppose there's no point in really focusing exclusively on the artists, because artists are just cultural workers, if you want to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And workers across the board are having a hard time surviving in the 20th century and paying all of their bills.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm just speaking from my own experience as a member of the so-called creative class, that our rates haven't gone up in two or three decades, but the rent sure has. Mm-hmm. Food sure has.
Oh, sure.
You know, internet and utilities are going steadily up every year.
And you're living in one of the, if not the most expensive cities in the world.
That's right. That's right. And that wasn't always the case. When I was growing up, New York was still primarily a working class industrial city. You still had lots of factories and things like that growing up. But now it's really a service-based economy. Isn't that what they call it now?
Yeah,
it seems to be.
They don't really manufacture anything there.
And
yes, and it's a haven for, you know, the landlord class. But for most people are just struggling, trying to pay the rent. Every 4 weeks it comes around again.
Yeah, I mean, I know a musician. You may know him too. He goes David Ippolito, who goes by the name That Guitar Man from Central Park. And
okay, that's awfully familiar.
Yeah, yeah. So he plays.
Performs on the streets.
He performs in Central Park every week, and and whatever he makes from it. And he's put out a number of really good CDs, and I interviewed him and I asked him way back when, if you don't make it, what's your goal? Is it? And he said, he just wanted to continue to do what he's doing. He likes his life, and
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think he's a good example of this definition. I have this one working definition of an artist is someone who doesn't have a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, many creative people, they keep their day jobs, and they're working, doing something, and then in their spare time, they write some poetry or maybe they paint some watercolors or something like that. I think the artists are the ones who are willing to put it all on the line. Or in my case, or just don't really have too many other things that they were ever good at.
That's true, yeah, because my favorite example of that is, of course, David Copperfield. He, as his parents said, he had blinders on his face or on his vision of being like just a magician full time.
Yes, yes. Well, it is Dickensian existence at this point, just trying to scrape by. I mean, part of it dovetails perfectly with the stereotype of an artist in our culture, anyway, is that of the starving artist. We don't expect, no one really expects artists to be making much money anyway, unless they're Andy Warhol or someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, after they die, their work sells for millions of dollars. But there's this persistent stereotype of that artists just don't have much, and they just live in a garret somewhere, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Therefore, artists don't get paid very well by whoever it is, whether it's a gallery owner or an art director at a magazine.
I was not familiar with your work, so I went online and I'm looking at your work, and the colors are just fantastic. The illustration and the colors.
Thank you.
That you're using. It kind of reminds me, to a certain degree, of I hate to compare artists to other artists, but Peter Max bright colors, and
he was out there when I was growing up as a child. He was ubiquitous in New York City. There were posters of his and on the sides of buses, and he was just part of the almost part of the landscape for a couple of years in the late 60s and early 70s. That's right. So I always loved his colors.
Beautiful.
Cartoonishness, yes.
Yeah, yep. Very, very psychedelic type stuff, for the 60s and 70s. You know.
That's okay. Right. He kind of came in on the tail end of the 60s psychedelia, and then he got super, super commercial with it.
Yep.
But those are the artists that, you know, we know their names of, people like Andy Warhol, who got super commercial.
But by doing nothing more than, painting a can of soup.
That's right. Exactly. And he said an artist has to be a businessman. That was almost part of the message of his art. And he even has said in interviews that when it came down to fame or, you know, making lots of money, that it's more important to make the money than it is to be famous. And he considered himself more businessman than artist. That's why I never really warmed up to Warhol that much, though. I find some of his work amusing. I appreciate his sense of humor and irony and all that, but it doesn't really keep me warm over the long haul. I feel like a good work of art, whether it's a painting or a piece of music or a novel, it needs to really hold me and keep me warm for a period of time.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it has to make you think. I'm just looking at your Don Quixote Impossible Dream, and man, what a good piece this is.
That was on the New Yorker about 3 years ago as a cover. They had a special climate change issue. And so I updated the Don Quixote, who's from like the 16th or 17th century, to the 21st century, where he's tilting not at windmills, but at these wind turbines you see somewhere. We don't have many of them in the U.S., but they're quite common in Europe, where they've committed to go off the grid to sustainable sources of energy, like solar and wind power and hydropower.
Yeah. Well, some place like a big city like Philadelphia or New York, I don't think they would be very sustainable, because you need a lot of space and you need to get them really high up, especially above all those skyscrapers.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I have a cover from about 10 years ago, a New Yorker cover that's a humorous image, but it's of New York City, Manhattan, with lots of those wind turbines, like mounted on each building has one of those, and solar panels on the roof, and each rooftop has a green vegetable garden on the roof. So it's kind of an impossible dream, and yet I was thinking, I don't know how far off it is. I think what's lacking is the political will.
Yeah.
I mean, why can't we could certainly have solar panels on the roof of every single building, and why couldn't there be green gardens on the roof of every garden? I'm always surprised from growing up there in New York City how rarely people go up on the roof. I used to spend all my time up there. It was the greatest place to be. You get to see everything. I'd go up to the rooftop, and there'd be nobody there.
Yeah.
Looking down on all the other rooftops, it's as if it didn't occur to any of the city dwellers that the best place to be is up on the roof. You got the whole place to yourself.
I think Carole King wrote a song about that, about going up on the roof.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. I always liked her.
Yeah.
So these are just, you know, the landscape and the infrastructure of the city itself is a source of inspiration. That's where I get all of my ideas.
I'm looking at the Subway Lovers. And again, the color in this is just beautiful. And it makes you think, you know. Where did they meet? Did they just meet in the subway? Because I met my wife in the subway in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
He made that just for you, Lee.
Very romantic place down in the subway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Mysterious down there. Yeah. You never know who you're going to run into.
You never know. So I may buy this for her, as a piece.
That's probably my most popular one because everyone seems to identify with it. They think that it's them. It's so romantic, and it's a favorite of mine. You know, you mentioned the colors. It's funny, you know, because for years I limited myself to just black and white. My earlier graphic novels were black and white, and you know, this new one, Naked City, has a full palette, a full color palette. But it took a while to get to that point. I feel like the city itself has a limited palette. It's not the most colorful place in the world, especially not in the autumn or the winter time. Mm-hmm. In the summer, it gets more colorful if you go up to Central Park or somewhere where they have trees.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
But we don't have that many trees there in the big city, so we don't take them for granted.
You bet. So now, the book Naked City is part of a trilogy. What was the trilogy mainly about?
Well, I call it the city trilogy. So each one of them is a completely different story, a completely different novel. But I realized as I was completing this Naked City that, hey, this is on. There's definitely a theme going on here through all my work, through all the New Yorker covers too, for that matter. About, you know, 90% of it, 95% of it is on the subject of the city. The city itself is my muse, if I had to say what my muse was. So that's why I decided to call it a trilogy with this last installment, Naked City. I realized, hey, I have two earlier graphic novels that are totally different narrative-wise, but they feature the city as a backdrop, as the kind of natural landscape. Why not call it a trilogy? And hey, if the author calls it a trilogy, it's a trilogy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's a thematic unity. What's different about this one is that the first two graphic novels were wordless. The first one was called Flood, a novel in pictures. It was purely visual. There were no captions or word balloons or thought balloons or anything like that. And the second one, Blood Song, likewise, was purely told through graphic means. It was really a sequence of several hundred images. Is it possible to tell an entire novel length story without resorting to words at all? Not a single syllable, except you know the title of the book itself. And what I discovered is you can go pretty far that way, that pictures are a universal language. And I started this Naked City was going to be the third wordless story, just purely graphic narrative. But then after a while, I felt like, well, I'd explored that pretty thoroughly in the last two volumes. And I always loved the language of comics, the iconography, the vernacular, if you will, of word balloons. You could even have thought balloons where you get to read what the characters are thinking about, mm-hmm. as well as captions and sound effects and all of that. So I wanted to use the entire vocabulary of comics. So in a way, this is coming back to my roots, I always loved the format of comics, even though I usually wasn't really that captivated by most of the superhero comics. Mm-hmm. I liked Spider-Man growing up, you know, but it got pretty redundant after a while, the mm-hmm. superhero comics. And yet I loved to just look at the pictures, even if I didn't have patience to read the stories that were pretty redundant.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just really using the panels, one panel after another, from left to right, top to bottom. And you could have a splash panel where mm-hmm. it takes up both pages. You could have all of these suspenseful elements that I always loved about the form
of comics, but telling a very different story, telling a more adult story, really. It's certainly not for little kids. Mm-hmm. Teenagers would love it, but I guess it's really through the eyes of a young person. It's a kind of a young it's a coming of age story.
Makes sense.
And so it's a little bit of an older demographic than your typical comic book.
Were you always artistically inclined when you were younger?
I guess I was. You know, I wasn't thinking of that. You don't think that way when you're 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
I seem to be very artistically inclined here. No, I was just drawing. I don't remember a time when I wasn't drawing or painting. I remember when they started teaching me how to read and write mm-hmm. in school, and what an uphill battle that was for me. I was pretty a slow learner with that. I finally got it, but I had already been drawing pictures for a few years before that.
That's amazing, because I went to public school in Philadelphia, and mm-hmm. on the weekends they had a program. Fleischman Art School, and you mm-hmm. would go for free. And I guess one of my teachers thought that I had a little bit of talent, which I really didn't have much talent. So, but
you probably had more than you. I mean, if the teacher saw it,
yeah, you know.
I think most, you know, almost any child before the age of 7 or 8. He's pretty naturally gifted.
Yeah,
I'm concluding. I think, but the problem is that past the age of, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, that's when the big kind of loss of confidence kicks in, where we start comparing ourselves with, you know, the hot shot. There's always some kid or two in the class who draws better than you do.
Oh, absolutely.
So most of us stop, you know, most of us aren't encouraged to continue. I feel like I was lucky that I had one or two teachers who were very enthusiastic and always encouraged me. And my kindergarten teacher, I remember once put up a bunch of my pictures on the wall.
Like, wow.
I guess that was my first exhibit. So, and I still remember that. You know, that was a major shot in the arm at the age of 5.
Absolutely.
Well, in my case, I wanted to draw cartoons, and they wouldn't. They wanted me to draw fruit, and
they were hung up with fine art. They
yeah, of course.
To be a fine art artiste.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And
I wonder these days that comics and graphic novels are getting a little bit more legitimacy, a little more respect than they used to get. I wonder if, you know, a teacher now would be so quick to steer a child away from comics and towards fine art. I think that the medium of comics is starting to be understood as a legitimate language and a legitimate means of communication for someone really at any age.
Yeah, I
absolutely.
I would agree. I would agree. Well, we're coming up to the end of this segment, and I could spend another hour talking with you. This has been a delight. This has been a delight. So come back anytime you'd like to come back.
Okay, very well. To be continued.
Yep. The book is Naked City, and Eric is the author, and he's a well-known artist. And
we look forward to the next volume.
Yes, well, I'm about halfway through the next one.
Okay.
I was about to say that if the listeners were curious, just to get a sneak preview of what it is we're talking about, on my website, there's lots of examples. You know, there's lots of things for people's eyeballs. And I think a lot of it will already be familiar to people, that they will have seen it, or some of it already. And they could get a preview of the first 5 or 6 pages of Naked City.
Oh, great.
And see, hey, just to whet your appetite.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
You bet.
Give your website.
It's just my last name, Drucker, drucker.com. D-R-O-O-K-E-R.
Great.
Drucker.com.
Very good.
There's a whole wealth of stuff there that's accumulated over the years. About 40 New Yorker covers. That's the most familiar thing that people will probably recognize, many of those covers. But then also the books that I've been doing all along, these graphic novels. I think people would definitely enjoy them, and it's a break from Leon Tolstoy's War and Peace.
yeah.
Not always in the mood for that kind of thing, but
no.
Be in the mood for something like Naked City.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for being here today, and
you're welcome.
Can't wait to talk to you again.
Okay, we'll be in touch then.
You bet.
All right, Eric.
Okay, guys. Take care now.
Thank you. And we're going to be back right after these words.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
When I got out of the Marine Corps, I was not just, working with my physical disabilities, I was emotionally broken. I remember thinking, how did I get here? How? It was affecting me in my marriage. My husband, he didn't know how to help me. He actually called Wounded Warrior Project. Wounded Warrior Project had this thing called Couples Odyssey.
It was an eye-opener, and I think it really saved our marriage.
They gave us books and resources and tools on how to help us with that.
I just love him. I love you, honey.
I love you too.
Watching her fight for her mental health, fighting for other veterans, fighting for this family, helped me to fight too. Well, I always loved her, but I love her 10 times more for that.
Not all wounds are visible. If you or a loved one are suffering, visit woundedwarriorproject.org/not alone.
Okay. When it comes to the father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
That was an excellent interview.
That was very good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
And now the latest report from the NBA's biggest baby, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, what did he do? He punched somebody?
Yeah, he's suspended for 3 games for shoving a reporter because of a question he was asked.
Wow. He didn't like the question?
Yeah, and so I actually didn't know this. I read deeper into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious the way they put this, that he's injured now, so he wasn't playing anyway for the last couple of games.
Right.
But they said that the suspension will not go into effect until he's well enough to play.
Oh, wow.
So it's even longer than 3 games.
Yeah, well, You can't do those things.
No, know? Exactly.
You can't let your emotions get the best of you, you know.
Exactly. No matter how much you're paid.
No. No. That's right. Because you can't.
No, you can't. You're a role model. You're supposed to be better.
In Kansas City, undefeated still.
It's still, yeah.
I think it's the Taylor Swift.
You think thing. So?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Taylor Swift effect. She was at the game the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you do, phone down to the refs?
You know, they keep winning. They won in overtime, so they keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
I watched movies over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Watched the movie, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
That's right.
Trap.
And just like all of his movies, there was a twist ending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. What did you think?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Taylor Swift, this is basically his version of a Taylor Swift story.
Well, kind of. Not really. Not really.
Not really, but I mean, sold-out arena and all that.
The guy is a serial killer, apparently, and they trap him
In the arena.
In the arena, yeah. And there's some twists in it.
There's some other twists, yeah.
Yeah. But I thought it was well done.
It was better than some of his other ones that seemed to be like all over the place.
And it was filmed in Philadelphia, so you got to see some Philadelphia sights
exactly.
in the movie. And
I'm not too sure, but I think they might have shot the concert at the Wells Fargo. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, they may have.
But some of the concourse levels was, I'm sure, Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have that right to do that.
Of course. It's easier.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we can go into an actual concourse of a arena.
Right.
You know, you only have so much time to use it.
And I saw, watched Quiet Place Day One.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was good. You know, I thought it was kind of okay how the whole thing started. And
so this is a prequel?
This is the prequel. Yeah, this is Day One.
Mm-hmm.
Of the invasion of the big bugs. And, they're sensitive to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
namely loud noises.
Yeah, they have super duper hearing. And that's why you have to be quiet, because they can hear you otherwise. Even if you whisper, they can still hear you.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was very, very interesting because it happens in New York City. And, you know, they explain why in the beginning that New York is one of the loudest cities in the world.
So, well, I think it's also ironic because New York City seems to have any kind of bug known to man or vermin known to man. And now they have these super duper hearing freaks of nature.
That's right. But I thought it was very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really good.
Absolutely.
So, I've been watching some movies.
Mm-hmm. We got to get back to Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai, I want to see the ending on that. And
can you believe Ralph Macchio is now 63?
Yeah, I can believe it. Sure.
I can't.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Why? Because I still can't believe I'm in my 40s.
Well, you are. I mean, time goes by.
It really does, really fast.
You know, you can't stop time.
Mm-mm.
I've been trying, but you can't.
You've been trying, yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of people have been trying.
Yeah, but you can't.
Can't do it.
So,
but you can roll it back 1 hour for about 3 months.
Yeah, you could do that. That saves some time.
And saves some light.
So, yeah. And save some light. The other thing I wanted to see is Sylvester Stallone.
What's his new thing?
The new thing. Well, it's not new. I can't remember the name of it, but it was he played the gangster, and he goes to...
Oh, this isn't another Expendables movie.
No, he goes to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
and becomes a gangster in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
So, interesting. Yep. Yellowstone's coming back on soon.
Mm-hmm.
The series finale, they say, and we'll see. But looking forward to Yellowstone. So,
exactly. Your Disney Plus show isn't coming back, right?
Which one?
The Mandalorian.
I think it will.
Oh, you think so?
I think eventually it will.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like all the hype has been quieted down.
No.
I don't hear about that as much anymore like I used to.
I love The Mandalorian, man. Yeah, I'm going to go. They'll bring it back.
They'll bring it back, exactly. And instead, for the next 3 months, you're going to be watching Disney Plus, getting ready for our Disney vacation, right?
Absolutely. We're going to see The Mandalorian live.
Exactly.
Can't wait. Be strong, stay strong.
The Brian and Lee Show is a BLS production.